Edward Osborne Wilson is with us this morning. E.O. Wilson to his students and colleagues, the renowned biologist down from Harvard with a thing or two to say to our representatives in Congress about preserving America's ancient forests. You and other scientists, Dr. Wilson, are lobbying for no logging zones, is that it, throughout the national forests?
That's right. We need a more clear
cut policy that draws a line to save the last remnant old forest of this country. Only about 5% of the original old-growth forests of America are left. And the reason why scientists are getting in on this is not that they want to interfere in any way with the ordinary timber industry of this country, but they see the necessity of hanging on to that last remnant because that is one of America's greatest natural resources. You could even say it's a large part of our natural heritage. These forests go back literally millennia, some of them probably millions of years, and they contain a substantial part of the fauna and the flora, the native fauna and flora, in great richness. And when the last of those are cut, then they will never be recovered. But if we hold on to them, then we'll help to hold on to America's substantial part of America's native fauna and flora, and we'll have them for recreation, and we'll have them for still unimagined uses into the indefinite future. It seems to me that it's not just a an economic issue for the long term, but it's very much a moral issue that we now have legislation to draw the line and say, look, let's leave that last little bit alone.
Well, Dr. Wilson, this is an argument that perhaps the layman might struggle with, because you cut down a tree, another one grows. We know the argument with reference to the spotted owl in the Northwest, and there's also evidence that shows that the spotted owl can do quite well in forests other than the ancient forest. Why preserve the ancient forest?
Well, it was unfortunate, as it always is, to pivot any conservation argument on a single species. What's at issue here is tens of thousands of species that live together in closely integrated communities. When you cut one of these forests, you're eliminating not just a substantial part of the population of a few species like the spotted owl, but you are eliminating with certainty the entire habitats of many, many other species, only some of which have been studied by scientists to this point. You cut it, and then you let it grow back. It's a very different kind of a forest, particularly when it is planted then, or certain species of trees are encouraged to grow as opposed to others. It becomes increasingly a tree farm with turnover, and you lose a large part of that tremendous assemblage of animal and plants that are centered there, in which some cases they are limited to that habitat.
You lose something aesthetically too, don't you?
Well, that's another point.
Of course.
Exactly. Right now, people can, I think most Americans appreciate the beauty of the Grand Canyon. They appreciate the majesty of Washington's Mall. They're just beginning to appreciate the beauty and the majesty of America's biodiversity, that it's its fauna and flora, and to come to realize that there's a great deal more to it than spotted owl or even American eagles. There are tens of thousands of species, many of them quite beautiful, some of them obscure, all of them of great scientific interest and a substantial portion of them of potential economic interest to us as well.
So, would this bill, sponsored by New Jersey Democratic Senator Robert Torricelli, would that be a big blow to industry? What would the impact be of no logging zones on industry?
This is not it's not going to have a major impact economically. What it does is call for the last remnants to be protected by law in a clear-cut manner. It then preserves this heritage and encourages the timber industry to go on and cultivate what it's already doing massively on land that is used for timber, and to continue the practice of tree farming in areas that otherwise have do not have this immense value that the last remnants of our natural forest possess.
What does logging do to the forest ecosystem? Does it just totally destroy it?
It depends on the forest itself. There are a few forests, and they're not the ones we're talking about here, really, that have relatively few species in them, and they can grow back rapidly. But a great many of these forests are very vulnerable, and when you cut them, clear cut them, that's what the bill, above all, is trying to prevent in as much area as can be defined as having these values that I've been describing. When you clear cut, you do drastically change. You change the whole ecosystem. Just think about it. You're for a substantial period of time when you clear cut, you're not only removing the dominant vegetation, but you're allowing intense sunlight and strong air current to sweep through the remaining undergrowth and the litter in the soil where so many of these smaller plants and the animal forms exist. And those go, they go extinct.
You've got a letter in front of you. I think it's signed by hundreds of scientists.
600. Yeah.
Will that have any impact on our friends in Congress?
Well, I certainly hope so. I mean, scientists don't often mobilize in this manner, but I have found that around the world, the scientists who specialize on biodiversity, you know, on the study of fauna and flora and natural ecosystems, are virtually unanimous in their support of this type of measure and in their recognition that irreversible damage is being done around the world. It's very important, I think, in addition, in terms of global significance, for the United States to set the example. We're all bemoaning the fate of the tropical rainforests, which are disappearing at the rate of about 0.5% or 1% of their cover a year, with devastating effect on the world's fauna and flora because so many of the species of plants and animals are found there. But we really don't have much moral high ground to stand on as long as we proceed right in front of the whole world to go ahead and mow down the last of our old-growth forests with a large part of our own biodiversity.
You know, Dr. Wilson, there is some good news here in that young Americans are much more attuned to the environment than they ever were. I'm a child of the 60s, and we didn't think that way. We didn't think in terms of ecology and conservation back then to the extent that kids are now. So I think my point is that ecology, conservation is much more accepted than it used to be. Even though you still hear the pejorative terms tree huggers, are you a tree hugger?
Yes. I don't nail spikes in the trees. I'm certainly a tree hugger. I think what we have here is a population that is gradually turning around and recognizing, as you're quite right, the new generations coming along become more and more environmentalists because they know more, they understand more. They realize that what we have here is not a threat in saving the last of America's natural environments. It's not a matter of imposing some great cost on American society for the delectation of a small group of people, but it's saving America's heritage, and it's clearly a matter of aesthetics, of value. It's a moral issue as well, and one that I think is going to pay off handsomely in every aspect of American life in the long term.
Well, good luck in Washington as you traverse the political forest down here.
Thank
Hope you.
You
don't get lost.
Well, we need luck and all the support we can get.
On a personal note, you started your career long ago in Alabama, and then you went up to Harvard, and you've been closeted in Cambridge for the last 40-some-odd years. Tell us about your research now.
I began my research, in fact, in the outdoors. I grew up in the beautiful woodlands, what's left of them in Alabama. And I, of course, to that I owe my deep personal interest in the environment. I studied insects. I'm an entomologist originally, and particularly the social insects. This led me to broad studies in the evolution of social behavior up to and including vertebrates and humanity, and that I expanded my interest to the diversification of life and the studies of ecosystems. And that is what I now balance in my research interest. And I then am drawn out repeatedly from the closet, as you say, to speak usually on behalf of the scientific community on issues like the one before us today.
Oh, it's wonderful to have your clear voice there, and we thank you for it.
Well, thank you for that.
I'm taking sides here, aren't I? But why not? I'm a tree hugger, too. Tell us about your new book, and then I'll let you go.
Well, I'm also in Washington as I did last night, have a panel discussion with a philosopher and a molecular biologist on the prospect of the unification of knowledge, the bringing together of science, the social sciences, and the humanities, which is the subject of a book I've just brought out with Knopf called Consilience. And Consilience has made, I'm pleased to say, the New York Times bestseller list, which is sort of an aberration for a book of ideas, to get up there with books like Chicken Soup for the Soul. And this is now also another major issue in academia, is the relation of what we call the great branches of learning and the fate of the liberal arts and the prospects of bringing them together and teaching them effectively to students, but also in designing future research projects and reconsidering moral issues such as the one we've been discussing of the world's forest.
Consilience.
Yes, with an S.
I'll have to head to the bookstore. Dr. E.O. Wilson, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Good luck in Washington.